K-Mud Podcast presents.
Good morning and welcome to Heart of the Earth. This is a program about Native Americans and other indigenous cultures. My name is Agnes, and I opened with Ulali, a song entitled Mother from their great CD, Makaiichi. And this is Women's History Month, so I have a special show today for you. And it's old stories and new stories, a lot of poetry, all by women. And it's March is Women's Her Story Month, and the way women are being treated right now on Mother Earth, I think it's really important that we do honor them. But I wanted to start with a story that I've shared a handful of times here on Women's History Month, and but I just love it. So I'm going to share it. It's a story by Pretty Shield, and it's an old story. It's entitled A Woman's Fight, and it says, A Woman's Fight is a firsthand narrative told to Frank B. Litterman by Pretty Shield, a Crow Rise woman. Litterman had contacted Pretty Shield, a woman of some renown among her people, because he saw a lack of information about significant Indian women in ethnographic publications. Pretty Shield was not too comfortable discussing women's lives and roles with a white man. However, because she was sorely in need of money to help support the grandchildren she cared for, or perhaps because she knew something he didn't, she agreed. Her stories, many gained from his prodding, some given because she wanted to instruct him in proper ways and seemed to find his ignorance alarming and perhaps dangerous, provide a clear picture of womanhood among her people during her lifetime. She did not see whites until she was 6 winters old. She told him her stories in sign language, aided by promptings of a translator, a Crow woman friend. She told this particular story because she was setting the record straight among the Crow, the record straight, and because she was also letting the white man know that Crow women were strong and self-defining, regardless of popular male opinions about them. She suggests the real Crow life for women was not the women's lives men depicted to whites. In her story, she says, once when I was 8 years old, we moved our village from the Mountain Lion's Lodge, Pompey's Pillar, to the place where the white man's town of Huntley now stands. There were not many of us in this band. 16 men were with us when the women began to set up their lodges, and one man named Covered with Grass was sent out as a wolf. I could see him on the hill when my mother was setting up her lodge poles. I was dragging the poles of my play lodge in a nice place that I had selected when I saw Covered with Grass, the wolf on the hill, signal, the enemy is coming. Instantly, two men leaped upon the backs of horses, their war horses that were always kept tied near lodges, and rode out on the plains to drive the other horses into camp. That there was great excitement, much running about by the women who left their lodges just as they happened to be when the signal came. Some of the lodges had but a few poles up. Others, whose owners were quicker, had their lodge skins tied, hanging loosely from the skin poles. Men, watching the hills, stationed themselves, one between every two lodges. Mothers, piling packs and part fletches into breastworks, called their children, and horses whined. Then I saw the horses that had been out on the plains coming fast, their hooves making a great noise and much dust. I must get out of the way. Dragging my poles, a load beneath each arm, I ran between two lodges whose lodge skins were flapping in the wind, my own little lodge yet on my back. In came the horses, more than 100, sweeping into the camp between lodges that were far apart. Too far apart, I thought. And this thought gave me an idea. Why not close the wide gap between those two lodges? Why not set up my little lodge between the two big ones and shut this wide place up? Well, yet the horses were running around within the circle of the camp. I dragged my poles to the spot and quickly pitched my lodge there. I heard my mother calling me. I had to work very fast to shut up that wide space, believing that my little lodge would keep our horses from getting out and the Lakota from getting in. But I did not finish pegging down my lodge skin. Not quite. Corn Woman found me. Ho, ho, she cried out. Here is a brave little woman. She has shut the wide gap with her lodge. Ho, ho. But just the same, she picked me up in her arms and carried me to my mother as though I were a baby. Corn Woman told this story every year until she died. Now I shall have to tell you about the fighting a little, because it was a woman's fight. A woman won it. The men never tell about it. They do not like to hear about it, but I'm going to tell you what happened. I was there to see, and my eyes were good, too. Yes, a woman won that fight, and the men never tell about it. There was shooting by the time my play lodge was pitched. A Lakota bullet struck one of its poles and whined. Arrows were coming among the lodges and bullets when Corn Woman carried me to my mother, who made me lie down behind a pack. I saw what went on from there. Several horses were wounded and were screaming with their pain. One of them fell down near my mother's lodge that was not yet half pitched. Lying there behind that pack, I did not cover my eyes. I was looking all the time and listening to everything. I saw strikes, too. A woman, 60 years old, riding around the camp on a gray horse. She carried only her root digger, and she was singing her medicine song as though Lakota bullets and arrows were not flying around her. I heard her say, "Now all of you sing. They are whipped. They are running away. And keep singing these words until I come back." When the men and even the women began to sing, as Strikes Two told them, she rode out straight at the Lakota, waving her root digger and singing that song. I saw her, I heard her, and my heart swelled because she was a woman. The Lakota, afraid of her medicine, turned and ran away. The fight was won, and by a woman.
Da da da.
Basically, a mammal. I am female only in the ability to breed and bear papooses, to be carried quaintly on a board or lost to welfare. I have no feelings. The sinuous planes of my brown body carries no hint of the need to be caressed, desired, loved. Its only use to be raped, beaten, and bludgeoned in some B-grade Western. I have no beauty. The lines cut deep into my aged face are not from bitterness or despair at seeing my clan destroyed one by one. They are here to be painted or photographed, sold, and hung on lawyers' walls. I have no emotions. The husky laughter, a brush of wings behind eyes soft and searching, lightly touching others, is not from caring, but from the ravaged beat of black wings rattling against the bars of an insanity that tells me something is wrong here. Someone is lying. I am an Indian woman. Where I walk, beauty surrounds me. Grasses bend and blossom over valleys and hills, vast and multicolored in star quilt glory. I am the keeper of generations. I caress the lover gently, croon as I wrap the baby. With quietness, I talk to the old ones and carefully lay to rest loved ones. I am the strength of nations. I sing to the whispering autumn winds. In the snow, I dance slowly, filling my body with power, feeling it, knowing it. I am the giver of life to whole tribes. I carry the seeds carefully through dangerous wastelands, give them life scattered among cold and towering concrete. Watch them grow, battered and crippled under all the lies. I teach them the song. I help them to hear. I give them truth. I am a sacred trust. I am Indian woman.
Jeanette Armstrong from the Okanagan Nation of British Columbia. I'm going to share with you now from a really wonderful book called Sister Nations, Native American Women Writers on Community. And it was edited by Hyde Erridge and Laura Tohe. And Laura Tohe says, in the oral tradition of the Dene, they say a baby girl was discovered atop one of the sacred mountains in Denata in the fourth world. This baby was raised and cared for by First Woman and First Man. Changing Woman, also known as White Shell Woman, was a special child who came to the world to save it. She was a holy person like White Buffalo Calf Woman in Christ. When she became a young woman, she went through the first Kinalda, a puberty ceremony. This transformative event marks a time of ceremony and celebration in which the family, clan, and community are involved. There is no shame, mystery, or fear of the natural processes of maturation and aging. With age comes life experience, knowledge, and wisdom for which there is respect. During the ceremony, the initiative embodies the spirit of changing woman. To the Dene, she is Azazanalihai, who birthed the twin heroes who made the world safe for habitation. By taking parts of her body, Changing Woman created the four principal clans. Changing Woman transforms herself according to the seasons of the year, from childhood and through each of life's stages, until she reaches old age. When spring arrives, she transforms into a beautiful young woman again, hence her name. And while the changing woman is part of the Navajo blessing way, she also represents the life stages of all women whose lives are continually in the process of transformation and recreation as daughter, sister, mother, aunt, and grandmother. We acknowledge Native women's experience and wisdom connected to Indigenous knowledge despite disruption, oppression, and banishment by colonialism and patriarchy. The voices speak of women's roles and responsibilities in the continuance of family and nation. Women united in the duties of burial rituals and renewal, and above all, kinship, ties to earth and community to create a stable and growing society, for it is often the women who form the backbone of their nation. The written art leaves a legacy of how Native women are bound through blood, history, through the healing power of human humor and language. The voices expressed reveal the transformative and recreative abilities of being female, of being changing woman, and using the common language we call English. We continue to tell our stories and our lives, for to have no stories is to be an empty person. Laura Tohe Dene. And this is from Laura Fuerta. She is a Mescalero Apache Yaqui. It's called Anna Ghost Dancer. Something about knowing women brought your hands to light and reattached them, reburied you with ceremony. That knowledge brought forth tears. I envision hands that loved and worked and held your sleeping children, and I wonder, did the killers understand what they were saying in relation to our women in their world? They must have been afraid of you, to mutilate you so, to try to keep your hands from being raised against them now. Yet it is your hands I see reaching out with a warning to us all. Something in the murder of a woman isolated from her people reminds us there are worse ways of dying than in fighting for our freedom. And this is from Hyde Erdrich, Ojibwe Nation, entitled Butter Maiden and Maize Girl Survive Death Leap. Even now, Native American Barbie gets only so many roles. Indian Princess, Pocahontas, or in these parts, Winona, maiden who left for brave love from the rock that overlooks that river down where eagles mate. In my day, she might have been asked to play Minnehaha, Laughing Waters, or the lovely one in the TV oil, corn oil ads. We call it maize, or even Captain Hook's strangely Asian Tiger Lily. Oh, what I have done for a Chippewa Barbie. My mother refused to buy tourist souvenir princesses in brown felt dresses belted with beads stamped made in China. They're stunted, Mom would say, her lips in that line. That meant she said the last word, and she was right. Those dolls' legs were stubby as toddlers, though they wore sexy women's clothes. They were brown as Hershey bars, and Mom pointed out, clothed in bandanas and aprons when sold as Southern gals. Most confusing was the feather that sprouted at the crown of each doll's braided hair. Do they grow there? A playmate once asked, showing me the doll her father bought her at Mount Rushmore. I recall she gazed at my own brown locks, then stated, "Your mother was an Indian princess." My denial came in an instant. My mother had warned me, tell them that our tribe didn't have any royalty, but there was a problem of believability, you see. Turns out Mom had floated in the town parade in feathers, raven wig, and braids when crowned maiden to the college brave in the year before she married. Oh, Mom, you made it hard on us. You did it at 18, what you did at 18. And worse, the local rumor that it was you on the butter box from the Land O'Lakes that graced most tables in our tiny town. You on their toast each morning. You, the object of the joke. The trick boys learned of folding the fawn-like butter maidens naked knees up to her chest to make a pair of breasts. I cannot count the times I argued for Mom's humble status. How many times I insisted she was no princess, though a beauty who had just happened to have played along in woodland drag one day. I wonder, did my sisters have an answer for the princess? Did you? Couldn't we all have used a real doll, a round, brown, or freckled jeans and shawl-wearing powwow teen queen, a lifelike Native Barbie? Better yet, two who takes the plunge off Lover's Leap in tandem and survive. And this one from Marcy Rendon. She's White Earth, Anishinaabe, and she's written a handful of novels. I just read one last fall about a missing and murdered girl. But she says, "What's an Indian to do when the white girls act more Indian than the Indian women do? My tongue trips over Takonsala, mumbles around the word Metakweasin. My Ojibwe's been corrected by a blonde U of M undergraduate. What's an Indian woman to do? Much to my ex-husband's dismay, I never learned the humble, spiritual, native woman's stance. Legs tight, arms closed, head bowed, three paces behind. My mother worked and fought with men, strode across fields, 100-pound potato sacks on shoulders broad as any man. The most traditional thing my grandfather taught me was to put jibik on the cue stick to win a game of pool, so I never learned the finer Indian arts so many white women have become adept at. Sometimes I go to powwows, see them selling wares. Somehow, the little crystals tied on leather pouches never pull my Indian heart. Huh, what's an Indian woman to do? I remember Kathy, she who sees the spirit lights, when she was still Katrina Olson from Mankato, Minnesota. And Raven Woman, damn, I swear I knew her when she was a Jewish girl over in St. Paul. As my hair grays, theirs gets darker. Month by month, their reservation accents thicker, year by year. Used to be reincarnation happened only to the dead. What's an Indian woman to do when the white girls act more Indian than the Indians do?"
Remember her spirit, remember her smile, remember her eyes, remember her style. Remember her face, remember her laughter, remember her now, remember her after. I'm looking for you, we searching for you, we praying for you, we looking for you, we searching for you, we praying for you to bring you home. Remember, you're not alone. I sent you a text, you didn't reply. I felt like a mess, I cannot lie. Called you 100 times just to see if you're alive. Went to voicemail every single time. All I could do was cry. Just wanted to be by your side. Went into panic mode, calling and calling around. You're still nowhere to be found. Remember her spirit, remember her smile. Remember her eyes, remember her style. Remember her face, remember her laughter. Remember her now, remember her after. I'm looking for you, we searching for you, we praying for you, we looking for you, we searching for you, we praying for you to bring you home. Remember, you're not alone. It's been 3 days, missing person case, made a poster with a pretty face. We went searching for you, asked around for clues. Posters on posters, felt closer and closer, getting to you. My heart races, don't know what to do. My heart races, I don't know what to do. We're looking for you. Remember her spirit, remember her smile. Remember her eyes, remember her style. Remember her face, remember her laughter. Remember her now, remember her after. I'm looking for you, we searching for you, we praying for you, we looking for you, we searching for you, we praying for you to bring you home. Remember, you're not alone. Trying to get the news to see that she matters. Her whole family hearts are shattered. Please barely investigate or calculate. Community and family left to navigate. Search party alone, looking up every road. Indigenous people seek justice. Justice for our mothers and our fathers. Justice for our sons and our daughters. Justice for our trans into spirit. Justice for all our relations. All my relations. When I say no more, you say stolen sisters. No more.
Stolen sisters.
No more.
Stolen sisters.
No more.
Stolen sisters.
No more.
Stolen sisters.
No more.
Stolen sisters.
Remember her spirit. Remember her smile. Remember her eyes. Remember her style. Remember her face. Remember her laughter. Remember her now. Remember her after. I'm looking for you, we searching for you, we praying for you, we looking for you, we searching for you, we praying for you to bring you home. Remember, you're not alone.
And that was JB, the First Lady, giving us Remember Her. And I believe she is from the Dene Nation. I'm going to share with you poems by Tanya Yah Winder. And she just has some really, really, really incredible words and just a beautiful book of poetry. And she says, "Dear heart, I'm ready to tell you about the reckoning, the lessons of surviving a bullet or storm. I want to teach you how to breathe again so you can understand how a heart learns to beat again, to beat again, to beat again, to breathe again." And first I wanted to let you know that she is a Southern Ute, Duckwater, Shoshone, and Pyramid Lake Nation. And this first one is for girls and women on fire. Everything happens for a reason and breaks you, though where heartaches was really creator, helping you dodge a massive bullet destined for danger, rupture, and the darkness you crawled your way out of long ago. So let go. Let go of anything that didn't work out the way you wanted, because you know this deep in your heart of hearts. You know you were born from a line of fierce women on fire who shine light in the darkest of places and heal those in need. And if people are afraid of you, let them be afraid. They should be, because you are powerful beyond containment, the kind of free people dream of embodying, and everything is coming together the way it was always destined. Because you are destined for greatness, and anything you ever set your mind to, you look yourself in the mirror and said, we are going to do this, and you did. You did do it. So don't stop now, because you are meant to keep all of the promises you ever made to yourself. And this one is called Resistance and begins with a dictionary noun, resistance, to exert oneself as to counteract or defeat, to withstand the forces or effect of. Oh, say, can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed in the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight or the ramparts we watched were so gallantly streaming, and the concussion grenades' red glare, water cannons bursting in freezing air, temperatures and rubber bullets shot at water protectors gave proof through the night that America is still spelled with three K's. America, a word that starts with an A, turned upright like a pointed white hood, saluting the settler colonialism, ism, a dangerous definition or doctrine of discovery buried in the highest court of the land, supremacy of the free, home of the brave braves who became animals upon discovery. But you can't discover a people who already existed, and you cannot find something that was never lost. Even an indigenous Holocaust couldn't get us written about in history books. Our numbers may not be written on arms, but you can count the amount of headstones from children buried in Indian boarding schools. America thought we died there when they cut our hair, stabbed our tongues into silence, pried our mouths open into singing anthems of freedom in English, a language America force-fed down our throats, like a pill called assimilation, telling us to let go of all we hold sacred, like our connection to the land, by moving us onto reservation, into desolation, a symbolic annihilation, so deafening today people forgot we exist, or that we are real, never seeing beyond the painted faces of Washington Redskins. This corporate-colored red skins our identity and bleeds in a country built on the backs of brown bodies, genocide, and slavery. What do these stars and stripes represent when those in power won't honor our treaty rights? Whose right? When we all have a right to survive and be free, to live, to drink clean water, and not build walls around these man-made borders. When history is written by colonizers, they are always heroes. Colonizer made from colon, body politic, a black snake swallowing everything, a black snake swallowing everything, a black snake swallowing everything when they're drilling in the name of money and killing our water and soil in the name of oil. And our sisters are being stolen, and the holes we dig in the earth mirror the holes we keep digging in ourselves. We keep digging in ourselves, and who can tell what the real truth is when alternative facts are birthed in a colonial womb. But the revolution will never be won through patriarchy or held in the fist of lips of patriarchal men, but it will be born from women who know how to carry movement in the womb of intertwining lives. The revolution will be birthed from women who know that deliverance and delivery come from being ripped open in an unstoppable force that reminds us our most powerful weapons will always be giving life and a body in prayer that stands up unafraid to speak. Can you see me? Can you see us when we sing? Oh, say, does that star-spangled banner yet wave o'er the land of the free and the home of the brave? You have the right to remain silent, but you also have the right not to be.
Danwanuhe, Laduhe, Yagungwe. Danwanuhe, Laduhe, Yagungwe. In peace and war, she will embrace. See strength and wisdom in her face. She'll offer her hand, though tired and worn, and nurture the land for those unborn. Danwanuhe, Laduhe, and the story she'll tell you'll always keep. She'll quench your thirst, dry tears from your eyes, give food for your spirit, and bring us new life. Danwanuhe, Lord. We give thanks to the woman, friend, mother, lover, and guide. Danwanuhe, Laduhe, Yagungwe. Danwanuhe, Laduhe, Yagungwe. Danwanuhe, Lord.
And that was the late Joanne Shenandoah. Give Thanks to the Woman from her CD, The Eagle Cries. I'm going to share with you, this is from Elsie Aposh Chen. She is from the Osage Nation. And she says, Lily Gladstone confides she wore my great-grandmother Eliza's blankets in three scenes. I don't remember my great-grandmother, though in a photo, age 90, she holds me in her arms. The actress plays Molly Burkhart, who lived down the street from Eliza in Fairfax. Hands out wide, Lily says Eliza had a broad wingspan. She pleated the wool broadcloth several times. Through an open window, wings outstretched, an eagle owl looms toward Molly's mother, dying from poison. My mother told me that owls and trees wailed the windswept night before her father died. Wrapping my great-grandmother's striped blanket around her shoulders, Molly asks her husband, during a downpour, not to close the window. But still, she says, be still, she says, and listen to the rain. Eliza's blankets fold and unfold stories into every pattern. I fly back home. The Osage replaced hide robes with Dutch-traded blankets in the mid-19th century. I stopped breathing the night of film when a murderer called Osage women blankets. While her husband injects Molly with arsenic, each sister is shot, poisoned, and bombarded to death. A woman in a voice over foreshadows, this blanket is a target on our backs. In the quiet after Molly's obituary is reported, I only hear rain. Outside the theater, silent thunderbirds overhead spread dark cloud-spattered wings, outlining circles across a broadcloth. Inside each target, a hole in the sky.
Who were bodies of sand. She had horses who were maps drawn of blood. She had horses who were skins of ocean water. She had horses who were the blue air of sky. She had horses who were clay and would break. She had horses who were splintered red cliff. She had some horses. She had horses with eyes of trains. She had horses with full brown thighs. She had horses who laughed too much. She had horses who threw rocks at glass houses. She had horses who licked razor blades. She had some horses. She had horses who danced in their mother's arms. She had horses who thought they were the sun, and their bodies shone and burned like stars. She had horses who waltzed nightly on the moon. She had horses who were much too shy and kept quiet in stalls of their own making. She had some horses. She had horses who liked creek stomp dance songs. She had horses who cried in their beer. She had horses who spit at male queens who made them afraid of themselves. She had horses who said they weren't afraid. She had horses who lied. She had horses who told the truth, who were stripped bare of their tongues. had horses who called themselves horse. She had horses who called themselves spirit and kept their voices secret and to themselves. She had horses who had no names. She had horses who had books of names. She had some horses. She had horses who whispered in the dark, who were afraid to speak. She had horses who screamed out of fear of the silence, who carried knives to protect themselves from ghosts. She had horses who waited for destruction. She had horses who waited for resurrection. She had some horses. She had horses who got down on their knees for any savior. She had horses who thought their high price had saved them. She had horses who tried to save her, who climbed in her bed at night and prayed as they raped her. She had some horses. She had some horses she loved. She had some horses she hated. These were the same horses.
And that was Joy Harjo. She had some horses from her great, great CD, Letter from the End of the 20th Century. And I'm going through all these books that I brought with me, and I don't think I have enough time to read this one story, so I'm going to share some poems with you. I love this one. It was written by Diane Millian, who I did a lot of traveling with during the 80s and 90s. And she says, I am Tanana, Athabascan, and Nova Scotian. I was born in Alaska in 1950 and lived on the road with my family from Nenana to Anchorage and all over the Kenai Peninsula. I was removed from my home when I was 12 because we were having a particularly hard time. I spent my young womanhood in foster homes, one in Washington, D.C., and in Hillcrest School for Girls in Salem, Oregon. I started writing stories to remember my folks and what we were feeling. I want to reflect on some of the confusion I experienced as a Native woman looking for reasons in history and in human nature for a myriad of experiences. I care deeply about the forces that moved within, about the losses we endured and learned from. One was loss of children because I was first concerned about how many Native children were removed from Alaska in the 1950s. I faced learning a whole history of the attempt to destroy our families. We must be very aware of the future that we portray in English. I think of English as a strange wing that sprouted, not grounded in the old thinking about the land, but one that we must learn to soar in. I wrote a poem called Judged Insane and Without Words, that is the experience of not knowing how to speak in any language. This is the nightmare that we will not live. And I'm going to share with you her poem, the housing poem, because she mentions people in here, the names she uses, you know, they're from real people and they were friends of mine. And she says, this is the housing poem. Minnie had a house which had trees in the yard and lots of flowers. She especially liked the kitchen because it had a large old cast iron stove and that, the landlord said, was the reason the house was so cheap. Pretty soon, Minnie's brother Rupert came along and his wife Ona, and they set up housekeeping in the living room on the old fold-out couch. So the house warmed and rocked and sang because Minnie and Rupert laughed a lot. Pretty soon, their mom Elsie came to live with them too because she liked being with the laughing young people and she knew how the stove worked best. Minnie gave up her bed and slept on a cot. Well, pretty soon, Dar and Shar, their cousins, came to town looking for work. They were twins, the pride of Elsie's sister, Jo. And boy, could those girls sing. They pitched a tent under the cedar patch in the yard and can be heard singing around the house, mixtures of old Indian tunes and country western. When it was winter, Elsie worried about her mother, Sarah, who was still living by herself in Moose Glen back home. Elsie went in the car with Dar and Shar and Minnie and Rupert and got her. They all missed her anyway and her funny stories. She didn't have any teeth, so she dipped all chewable items in grease, which is how they're tasty, she said. She sat in a chair in front of the stove usually, or would cook up a big pot of something for the others. By and by, Rupert and Ona had a baby, who they named Lester, or nicknamed Bumper, and they were glad that Elsie and Sarah were there to help. One night, the landlord came by to fix the leak in the bathroom pipe and was surprised to find Minnie, Rupert, and Ona, Sarah, and Elsie, Shar, and Dar all singing around the drum next to the big stove in the kitchen, and even a baby named Lester who smiled, waving a big, greasy piece of dried fish. He was disturbed. He went to court to evict them. He said the house was designed for single-family occupancy, which surprised the family because that's what they thought they were. And here's another poem by Marcy Rendon Ashnabi. She says, "My life is deeply moving. I live life intensely. Who inspired me? Jim Northrup, a writer, my mom, and all the Native women who died without being heard." And she says, "You see this body? I mean, do you see this body? Legs, are you a leg man? Let me tell you about these beautiful legs, leg man. They have walked and stood and squatted, walked across this nation on the trail of tears, stood firm at wounded knee, squatted to give birth to all humanity. Oh, yes, leg man, these sure are some beautiful legs. And you, hey, you over there, you like ass? You an ass man? Well, let me tell you about this ass. It's been kicked and shoved and beat. Nazi nuns, KKK, U.S. soldiers. Feel it, man, soft and round, good as new, some beautiful ass, huh? You see this body? I mean, do you see this body? Hey, man, you over there, see this smile and flashing eyes? Sure, you can turn your head. Hey, man, let me tell you about this pretty smile and flashing eyes. Got me across the Berlin Wall, free passage on a ship out of Nam, fed my kids quicker than the welfare line. Amazing smile and flashing eyes. Turn your head just long enough." And I'm going to close with Sharon Birch, really beautiful song, Nazi Girl. And the songs are about her grandmother, her mother, herself, her daughter, and I will be back next week. Thank you.
This has been a K-Mite podcast. To listen to other shows and more episodes of this show, find us on all the platforms where you get your podcast, and also on our website, kmud.org.